Thank you, sisters. Well, this is an opportunity I won't ever have again to give the introduction to my son. I think the most, mostly what I'm so overjoyed about, you know, we celebrated the life of a new baby, and in this particular moment, is one in which I feel relaxed. I feel like there's hope. My family will continue, and I can't really explain it, except that it's just a beautiful moment for me. But interestingly enough, as I have already begun to listen to Aaron and some of the things that he's done, he's already been a blessing to me and in my life, in his ministry. And I'm looking forward to seeing that for the rest of my life. And the day comes when I pass into the next life, if the Lord doesn't return first, I'm looking forward to seeing my family there in heaven. I don't suppose at that time that they will be more special than any of the rest of you, because I know those kind of things will change. But it's a special day for me, and I would ask you to always hold him up in your prayers, and especially this night as he speaks to us. And so I give to you my son, Aaron Moser, a priest in the Church of Christ.
Thank you, Dad. Fortunate to have my father in my life as well. Been a blessing unto me, as most assuredly. I've always thought of him as a Christian soldier. We need more Christian soldiers. We need men of faith. So I thought about what I was going to say tonight. So I thought about what I would bring. I looked around at the world, you know, and I just don't see a lot of hope in the world, because there really isn't much hope in the world. When you look at our government, they're handing down decisions that run contrary to our core beliefs. Businesses are rendering decisions and making policies that run against our core beliefs. We're under attack. There was a time when churches would stand up against these things, but as time has gone on, they've capitulated. They've allowed sins, which were once abhorrent, to enter into their churches, and they turn a blind eye. And so when we look what's going on around us, we're increasingly becoming very much alone. And I look back on the words and that we've been given, and I find hope in the words that we've been given. I find encouragement, and I find peace in the Word of God. I'd like to open with a reading. Joshua. And I'm going to read the whole first chapter of Joshua. 18 verses. And at the onset of this, Moses has passed away. Children of Israel are beginning their journey into the Promised Land. They've been promised the land, and they were tossed out for 40 years because of the sins they had committed. So now, after Moses passing, God has come to Joshua and has told him it's time. So in the first book, or in the first chapter of the book of Joshua. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, and all the land of the Hittites, Under the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee at all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give to them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid, neither be dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, Pass through the host. Command the people, saying, Prepare you victuals. For within 3 days you shall pass over this Jordan and go and possess the land, which the Lord your God giveth you to possess. And to the Reubenites and the Gadites and to half the tribe of Manasseh spake Joshua, saying, Remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, The Lord your God hath given you rest and hath given you this land. Your wives, your little ones, your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side of the Jordan, but ye shall pass before your brethren armed, all the mighty men of valor, and help them. Until the Lord hath given your brethren rest, as he hath given you, and they also have possessed the land which the Lord your God giveth them. Then ye shall return unto the land of your possession, and enjoy it, which Moses the Lord's servant gave you on this side of Jordan, toward the sun rising. And they answered Joshua, saying, All that thou commandest us we will do, and whithersoever thou sendest us we will go. According as we hearkened unto Moses in all things, so will we hearken unto thee. Only the Lord thy God be with thee, as he was with Moses. Whosoever he be that doth rebel against thy commandment, and will not hearken unto the words and all that thou commandest him, he shall be put to death. Only be strong and of a good courage. When we pick apart this reading, we can see Joshua was given protection. He was given God's abiding spirit. He was given an inherited land. He was granted victory in all these things. Not only that, he received the support and the obedience of his people. There was one thing that I'm going to focus on tonight that Joshua needed to provide. Courage. He had to provide a good courage. That's what we must provide as well. So courage, what is it? Something that I talk about often, something I think about often in my line of work. If you haven't got courage, it doesn't matter what gear you have, doesn't matter what kit you carry, doesn't matter what tools you have. They're worthless without courage. They're worthless without having the right mindset. And so at its heart, courage is action despite fear. If you look it up in Merriam-Webster's, it's mental or moral strength to venture, persevere, and withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. It is the antidote to fear. It's what replaces fear. Well, trumps fear, I'll say. And when I looked at my studies and I wanted to talk about courage, I thought, I'm going to talk about bravery as well. But you know, when I looked up bravery, I said, how many times is bravery mentioned in the Bible? Anyone want to take a guess? Zero. Well, I've always used courage and bravery together. They were, you know, synonyms. You look up in the thesaurus, and there they are. They're synonyms to each other. And so I had to study this. I had to understand why. Why is bravery not mentioned in the Bible? And that's because it is philosophically very different than courage. So I'm going to go down that road for a little bit. If you look up the definition of bravery, it's the quality that allows someone to do things that are dangerous or frightening. As I said, I could not find it in the Bible. I could not find it in the Book of Mormon. It may be in the Book of Mormon, but I couldn't find it. And the reason is, as I began to study this, is that bravery in and of itself is a standalone emotion. It's a survival trait. It's something that, you know, we we don't necessarily have to choose. Bravery can be reckless, can disregard life. Bravery disregards fear. And so there is a time and a place. If we find ourselves in some kind of desperate situation, we may need to exhibit bravery. So it has a place. You may find yourself in a dangerous situation. You find yourself in an accident or, you know, in the presence of evil people who wish to do you harm. And bravery is required at those times. But it's not a choice. You don't choose to be brave always. And when bravery is a choice, it's typically a self-serving choice. And you can see this when you look in so many of our sports nowadays. They call them extreme sports. You know, there's a guy gets on a motorcycle and he flies 60 feet through the air, gets off the motorcycle, gets back on it. That's brave. But he's doing it for glory. He's not doing it because, you know, there's a great moral dilemma. You know, he's doing it for pride and for other things. But he's exhibiting bravery when he does something like that. And so it's glorified by our culture. We laud bravery, as is found so often in the media. But courage at its heart is different. Courage cannot stand alone. It is always coupled with honor or duty or love or compassion or devotion. It's the keystone virtue that makes the others work. And then there's another aspect to courage. Without fear, there's no courage. So there you have this little triangle, all right? You've got courage, you have fear, and your other emotions, your honor, your duty, your love, your compassion. So courage knows that there's danger. Courage knows and understands the risks, and yet it moves on. And bravery, you know, it doesn't always seek to live, but courage seeks to live. It may not be the end of the outcome, but courage seeks life. But since it's coupled with fear, you know, our courage can be worn down. We can lose hope. We can lose in our drive. And so the spirit of fear, because it's taxing, it can overcome our courage. So we'll talk about fear for a little bit. You know what? If we succumb to fear, I'll ask this question. If we succumb to fear, who is it that's making their way into our lives? Does God give us a spirit of fear? If we're afraid to testify in testimony service, if we're afraid to pray in public, if we're afraid to do good works before the eyes of men, Who wins? Who gains the victory if we allow fear to rule our lives and make our decisions? Consequently, you know, we can perpetuate fear in others. You know, fear is a disease, and it can spread. It can spread with comments we make to one another. It can spread by making insults, you know, there's all manners of ways that fear can spread. So I put it to you that here in this body, we should not be perpetuating fear. This should be our safe place. We should be building each other up. We should encourage one another, not perpetuate fear. How do we encourage each other? We come here and we pray. We pray out loud. We come here and we testify on Wednesday nights or sacrament services and prayer services. And we testify and we recharge each other's batteries. We give encouragement to one another. The other night, we had a young brother stand up and give a testimony. He was nervous. Everyone could see it. But he got through it, got done. And I was so happy to see brothers and sisters walking up to him and giving him encouragement, thanking him for standing, appreciating the message in which he gave, encouraging our youth. Paul also encouraged those ministry that he had contact with. If you look, 1 Timothy, in the first chapter, Verse 7. Nope, that's the wrong one. I wrote down the wrong one. All right, made my first mistake. Anyway, Paul is talking to Timothy, and he tells him, you know, the Lord has not given you the spirit of fear, but of power and of sound mind. 2 Timothy, thank you. Appreciate my pastor, assistant pastor helping me out there. There we go. 2 Timothy. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And so if God doesn't give us fear, who gives it? Furthermore, if we don't testify God's blessings, is he going to bless us further? Why does God give blessings? So that he can be glorified. If we are not glorifying him with the blessings that we receive, is he going to continue to bless us? We were told this morning that we needed to pray. We absolutely need to pray. We need to ask for God's guidance, ask for his direction, ask for his blessings, ask for these healings. Conversely, that comes with a requirement. We need to let each other know. We need to stand and give those testimonies. We need to portray them in our literature that we have, on our Facebook pages, on our email groups. We need to laud those blessings. So, I heard a story once from a Medal of Honor recipient. His name was Desmond Doss. Anyone ever heard that name before? I don't see any hands. All right, it's a new story. So Desmond Doss was a Medal of Honor recipient in World War II. Desmond was in a class all his own, though. He occupied an interesting place on the list. I mean, it's our nation's highest honor that we give for valor in combat. Usually when you disregard your own life and you go out and commit some act of honor, and saving lives is usually what it comes down to, or averting the enemy. But Desmond, like I said, he was the first one to ever win the Medal of Honor as a conscientious objector. Now, back in World War II, conscientious objectors were people that didn't agree necessarily with the war or something. In Desmond's case, it's not that he didn't agree with the war. It's that he took a literal translation of the Bible. And when he read the Ten Commandments, in one of those Ten Commandments, is thou shalt not kill. And he took that to mean literally. And so he refused to carry a gun, would not pull the pin on a grenade, would not swing a knife at an enemy combatant, refused to do it. And so he didn't just come up with this one day. He was taught from a very early age, you know, what faith can do and why and what the rewards are. His mother was the influence in his life, his Christian influence. One of the stories that I found about him. So he grew up in the Depression. So he was they were very poor, as most people were in that time. And so he got sent off to go to town to get a glass of milk. So he was walking back home. He fell, and not wanting to spill the milk, he grabbed onto the bottle real tight. And when he fell, glass shattered. It cut his hand. So he went home to his mom. His mom took him to the hospital. Doctors at the time told him, you know, the cut is so bad, he's never going to have the use of that hand again. His mother got him bandaged up at the hospital, took him home, and every day she prayed for him, prayed over his hand. She'd rub it and massage it and pray for him while she was doing it. And he received a healing. He was able to use his hand, no detriment to his hand. So he learned very early on, you know, the power of prayer and what God can do. Another thing that was pivotal in his life, there was a picture hanging on his wall. Picture of the Ten Commandments. And so it was an artist's rendition of the Ten Commandments. And under the one that said, thou shalt not kill, there was a picture of Cain murdering Abel. And his brother and sister said that, you know, he often would take a chair and he'd pull it over to the wall and he'd get up on the chair and he looked right at that picture. And he could never understand why he would want to take the life of a fellow man. Didn't get it. You know, and there's something to be said for that. If you look in Alma, in the 14th chapter. We can find just such an example. Verse 42, we'll start in verse 42, I'll read verse 47. And this is when a group of Lamanites has left, and they've come under the protection of the Nephites, and they're getting ready to make their vow, because they used to be such a bloodthirsty people, and they sinned, and they murdered, and they killed, and they wanted to give it all up. They wanted to make it right with God. And so here at verse 42, their king has made it a speech to them. And I'll start there. And now it came to pass that when the king had made an end of these sayings, and all the people were assembled together, they took their swords and all the weapons which were used for the shedding of man's blood, and they did bury them deep in the earth. And this they did, it being their view, a testimony to God and also to men, that they would never use weapons of war again for the shedding of man's blood. And this they did, vouching and covenanting with God that rather than to shed blood of their brethren, they would give up their own lives. And rather than take away from a brother, they would give unto him. And rather than spend their days in idleness, they would labor abundantly with their hands. And thus we see that when these Lamanites were brought to believe and know the truth, that they were firm and would suffer even unto death rather than commit sin. And thus we see that they buried the weapons of peace, or they buried the weapons of war for peace. So there's something to be said for not wanting to, having a desire to, for peace and not wanting to kill your fellow men. And so Desmond learned that from a very early age. And he made that commitment at a very early age. However, when the war broke out, he was working in a shipyard, and he was offered a deferment because he was in a special classification. He was building ships. It was deemed a necessary work field. However, when it was offered to him, he didn't take it. He said, I cannot let others go in my place. And so when the draft came, he signed up, and he went down and reported to the army. He brought his minister with him to tell him, hey, I want to be a non-combatant. Well, the army told him, there is no such thing. You can be a conscientious objector. That's the best we can give you. He said, well, I'm not going to carry a gun. And due to some legislation that had taken place earlier, they could allow him to serve without ever having to fire a weapon. So, as with most of these people who were conscientious objectors, he became a medic. And he said the reason he became a medic is he wanted to heal people as Jesus did. He didn't want to harm. He wanted to heal. And so he put on the uniform. He saluted the flag. He followed his orders. And he became a medic. Pretty rough start for this guy, though. His particular religion was Seventh-day Adventist. And so they believed that the Sabbath was on Saturday. Well, he would go in on Friday night, and he would ask for his pass for Saturday. So he could leave, he'd go to a church, and he could pray and read his scriptures. And so, based on his religious convictions, they granted that to him. Well, all the other soldiers never got Saturday off because they didn't have that. So they began to resent Desmond for what he was and what he was asking for. And so every other day, he would come back, and he would work double on Sunday, making up for all the people that were gone, but didn't matter. They didn't like him. And so he would sit at his bunk at night, and he would get down on his knees to pray. And as the soldiers, other soldiers in there would see him pray, they would yell out curse words, yell out his names, but he kept praying. So they took it up a notch, and they began to throw their boots at him as he was praying. But he didn't stop. Got so bad, as he was reading his Bible, they would yell and curse and scream at him. But he kept reading. He was told by one of his fellow soldiers, the first chance I get when I see you in combat, I'm going to kill you. But he didn't relent. It takes a little bit of courage to do something like that. So eventually he completes his training. He gets deployed to the Pacific. Very quickly, though, he began to turn the hearts of his fellow soldiers. Earned a Bronze Star in Leyte for bravery. He went under fire numerous times to save the wounded, sometimes within 10 feet of the enemy. When he was asked why he would do this, he reasoned, He shouldn't value his life over others. He loved his fellow man too much to allow him to die in his place. And so they began to respect him a little bit more. They took it easy. They didn't throw their boots at him when he was praying anymore. Didn't curse at him when he was reading his Bible. Oh, forgot to mention the Bible, which he was reading, was a special gift to him from his wife. They just gotten married right before the war, and she'd given him this Bible. So he read it every day, found it a source of comfort, especially when he was so much alone. It's going to come in later. So as the campaign went on in the Pacific, began to hop islands, they got to Okinawa. And in Okinawa, the Japanese had been preparing for years and years for this incoming invasion. They knew the Americans were coming. They knew something was going to happen. So they built tunnels, mowed down trees for killing fields, dialed in mortar fire and artillery fire, and supplied the entire island completely with ammunition, food. I mean, it was an actual rock fortress. And so it came time for the United States to come and take this island. His unit, specifically on April 29th, 1945, they were tasked with assaulting a 400-foot cliff. I think they called it Hacksaw Ridge. And so they landed on the beach there, and the ridge was right in front of them. As they're landing on the beach, everyone, of course, is scared. There's fear. But they're all moving forward. They're all exhibiting that battlefield courage. But Desmond steps it up. Tells his commander, maybe someone should say a prayer. His commanding officer got everyone together. Same commanding officer who helped ridicule him, tried to get him kicked out of the army, tried to give him a Section 8, which is he was saying he was crazy, couldn't be there anymore. Said, all right, you gathered everyone together. So Desmond's going to pray. They all gathered around, and Desmond said a prayer before the assault. They went up this cliff face, and not a single soldier suffered a casualty. When the reports came in from all the other soldiers, massive casualties all around the island, except Desmond's unit. Zero. Absolutely none. And they came in, and they asked, how did this happen? The command staff and the upper echelons wanted to know, how did he do this? How did you guys do this? What did you do differently that we can implement other places? The commanding officer said in his reply, Desmond prayed. That was all he could offer. Saturday, May 5th, it was a different day. As I said, they were bombarding the island, and it was to no effect because they were tunneled deep into the rocks of the in caves, honeycombed all throughout the mountain, all throughout the island. So Saturday, May 5th, they begin to press their attack from off the top of that same cliff face. This time, the battle didn't go so well. The Japanese waited until they were in view of one of their killing fields and then simultaneously opened up with several machine guns. And within minutes, 100 men became casualties. So the hasty retreat was called. Desmond gets to the cliff and he looks back. 100 of his buddies laying on the field. He made the choice. He said a prayer. He said, Lord, let me go get one. He ran back. He grabbed one. Took a rope and by hand lowered him down to the beach so he could be excavated or evacuated off to the hospital ships. He looked back and said, Lord, one more. And off he went. And for 5 hours, that was his prayer. Lord, one more. One more. And by hand, lowered him down. One by one. Got to the end of the day. 100 men had been evacuated off the island. Including his commanding officer. All the men that had thrown shoes at him. All the men that had cursed at him. He felt, just loved his fellow man too much to leave him there. So that same night, Desmond's in a foxhole with a couple other soldiers. A grenade pops into their foxhole. Desmond wasn't able to get out in time. He suffered wounds. Instead of having the litter bearers come in the middle of the night, because that's when the Japanese would attack, he treated his own wounds and he waited for 5 hours. litter bearers came in the morning, scooped him up, and as they're taking him back, he saw another soldier on the side, off to the side. He rolled off his litter and said, "Take that soldier. He's worse than I am." They said, "No, you're bad. You need to go. He's worse. Go take him." So the litter bearer scooped up that other soldier, took him off. He was able to find another wounded soldier, and together they both started making their way back to the beach. And suddenly a sniper opened up, shot him in the arm. So he fell down, saved the life of the other soldier there, because the bullet didn't enter into that soldier, it just hit him in the arm. He finally crawled his way back 300 yards to the cliff and was lowered down to a hospital ship. So once he's on the ship, he's been treated, he goes to reach for his Bible, one his wife had given him. It was gone. So he grabbed one of the orderlies and he asked, could you pass word to the fighting men? I'm missing my Bible. If I could find that, I'd like to have it back. So they passed the word off. The commander, and they had lost that ground from off that cliff face. And they got word. Desmond's looking for his Bible. He wants it back. And those same men that threw shoes, cursed, tried to mock his religion, threatened to kill him, took back the ground. And when they took back the ground, they found his Bible. And a sergeant cleaned it up, dried it off, gave it back to him. He had that Bible, was able to bring it back to his wife later on. So this is the kind of courage that we're going to need in the coming days. We need that kind of courage. Because the world is going to throw their shoes. They're going to curse. There's going to come a time when we have to be the light. When we need to stand up. And despite the fact that they've hated us, we need to love them in return. And it's going to take courage. So we need to encourage each other. We need to strengthen each other. Psalms 31:24. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all you that hope in the Lord. Thank you for your time.